Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And hello, and welcome to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran. With me on today's program, Thomas Buford Jr. Mr. Buford is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. He's been with us before. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, so Jay, thank you for having me back. Appreciate that.
I always appreciate the conversation, and you come back with some fresh perspective. You were in Selma over the recent times for the 60th anniversary of the Selma March, and I take me inside of what that was like for you.
Right. So on Sunday, we were at the Edmund Pettus Bridge, the march over the 60th anniversary of Bloody Sunday. And that was on the heels of the National Urban League's CEO leadership retreat that we had in Atlanta, Georgia. So just days before we went that. And then, members of the leaders of the 92 affiliates across the Urban League movement, along with our national leadership, Mark Morial, our president and CEO of the National Urban League, we all made that sojourn to Selma, Alabama, to participate with other leaders and other organizations to commemorate and to remember the sacrifices and the journeys and all of the actions, if you will, that was set forth from that very momentous time.
60 years it's been since that moment in Selma. What's your perspective right now, and just kind of where we are as a country, where we are as communities across this country?
Right. And, you know, that time at Selma and just leading up to it showed is, you know, all the progress, all the struggle, of course, and sacrifice, but the legislation that succeeded those actions over time, how they developed, all the practices that have developed. And then, you know, right now, you know, we're in some spaces where we're starting to see some of that progress being challenged, starting to regress, and getting some different attention than it has over the past. So, there was a lot of discussion around that, a lot of concern around what will be the way forward for the progress that has been made.
I'd be interested to hear what kind of discussions were about the progress that might or the ways to move forward, for sure. But just again, kind of reflecting back to where the movement for civil rights was 60 years ago. People were stepping out into an unknown and a very dangerous unknown. Was that sense, that spirit, was that on display this past weekend?
There was. I would say that there was quite a bit of, you know, watching the progress that has been made, being challenged in many cases, eroding, and challenges against some of the laws, some of the constitutional changes that were made. And that was very concerning for different organizations who participated, different individuals who participated, all being impacted in different ways, some immediately, some, you know, potentially on the horizon, but a lot of uncertainty as to where what will be the what will be the changes, either immediate or forthcoming, either short term or long term, and really understanding wanted to understand that the strength of our systems of checks and balances, and you know everything, and you know just a challenge and trying to see up how our democracy responds to this.
And that's an interesting way of putting it there. Like you said, how this democracy responds to it, because if we think back to 60 years ago, this is a violent scenario. There, you know, this is a dangerous time. I'm imagining that was not the case in Selma this past weekend. But at the same time, there seems to be this kind of insidious backlash that's coming on a whole different level when it comes to the progress that has been made to try to bring equity to this country. I wonder if you can reflect on that just a little bit.
Right. So we would think that the progress that has been made, that we would continue to build on that, right? That we would see continued advancements, that we would see the mindsets that said, got to a place to see that diversity is an inclusion is good for all, right? And, you know, we know how many, so many different people, disabled individuals, veterans, women, were all brought into, equity with some of these processes over time. And to see some of these rights start to erode is challenging, right? So we just don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty there, all right? And to just see this hard work, not understanding what the future of it is quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly respect your position in the sense that, like you said, there's still a lot. We've talked about how in the first 6 weeks of this new administration, a lot has been coming, executive orders, and it's almost impossible to kind of keep up to date with everything's coming. But at the same time, in your position and others' position, you can only react to what actually happens for sure.
Certainly. There's a huge change in the volume and the velocity of change, right? So we're looking at that. At the other hand, you have to look at, it's changing in different ways for different different groups, different locations. When I mentioned the 92 affiliates across the Urban League movement, they're all in different geographies, different states, different cities within those states, right? So, they all have their own local responses, and is impacting them locally in different ways, as well as not all Urban Leagues run the same type of programming. So we're all, everyone's impacted differently. What I will say is that we're being attentive, that, we're staying on mission, right? But we're not being overly reactive, right? We're not going to punt on first down, right? We're going to see how some of this plays out. We might not punt on second down, right? We are going to, see how this moves, and then we will read the defense, and then we'll decide how we want to move forward.
Yeah, there's no sense in having a fight when the fight's not just there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yet.
We don't want to raise alarm. Now, there are some things that, the Urban League as a movement, not only do we look at services and different programming that we're doing and resourcing for the community, but we also have an office on Capitol Hill, right? So we also look at how we might impact policy as well. So, we have our eyes on all of these, out of Washington Bureau. We have our eyes on a broad perspective of change that's coming down.
I know before we went on the air, you talked a little bit about coalition building. Maybe we can start bridging into that just a little bit, in the sense that we can get a sense, maybe, again, mm-hmm. that there might be a certain national spirit, for lack of a better term, that might be pushing back against equity movements. But at the same time, are you sensing that there are also allies who are ready to step up, or who seem ready to step up to kind of join in here?
Yeah, certainly coalition building is happening at the national level with historical civil rights organizations from not only African American, Latino, Jewish organizations, labor unions, unions that look at education, you know, educational institutions. So we're seeing that this broad coalition understanding that some of the changes are wide sweeping, in some cases impacting some more than others and more instantaneously than others, right? But if when you start to see that pattern, then they're trying to look at solutions, trying to understand who allies are, try to understand who allies are that said, hey, I'm going to be a full-on ally. I'm going to publicly proclaim my allyship, if you will. Hmm. And then some who say, hey, I'm still with you, but I'm just, I'm in the background, but I'm still with you, right? So we're, you know, there's a lot happening across all of those spaces and in different places. So really just trying to understand the landscape of that.
Sure. It's got to keep it going. So when you're meeting with the other chapters from around the country down in Atlanta, what was the sense? I mean, again, I think you've kind of, you're touching upon it, but let's maybe hear about what you were hearing from other groups and maybe things that maybe resonated a little bit more with you for what is happening here in Buffalo.
Right. So, you know, what we're looking at at Buffalo is, you know, as you know, organizations should do at any time is really understanding, what's my position and what is my potential exposure? You know, when you're talking about not-for-profit organizations or many others, you're looking at your funding sources, and trying to understand, re-engaging your partners, making sure that, you know, that your mission is still relevant, that you're still able to service the people that you want to service and that they still see value in that. And it is not in conflict with any of their value, societal or business. And letting them also see the business value of why it's important and how your the mission that we have kind of ties into what they're trying to accomplish in the community. So I think everyone was doing that in their own way, within their own geographical spaces, amongst their partners, both at the federal, county, city, local levels, and you know their private partnerships as well. So everyone was just saying how important it was, and then also within your organization that your staff is, you know, that you're talking to your staff, communication is key, and that your board members, who may be from these different organizations that have different approaches to how they want to respond or react to some of these recent changes.
Yeah, most certainly, again, we don't necessarily want to compare your board to, you know, other national, like you said, organizations or bus companies, corporations who have abandoned to a certain extent DEI commitments, just for an example. So most certainly wanted, back to then to your board. How has it been making sure that everybody is on the same page, so to speak?
Right. Well, I want to say that what we did was share and being very transparent with our board, being able to inform them, and as I mentioned, taking stock of, you know, where is our funding? What is our funding mix? You know, and then, you know, what are some of our other, what do we have right now with regard to sustainability? You know, because you always have to be prepared to weather different changes, whether they be, political changes, legal changes, technological changes, environmental changes. There's always different impact, right? So we look at our resilience and our sustainability and communicate that with the board. Well, I would say for the Buffalo Urban League board, they've been very supportive. We have great leadership. We have great partnerships. Those individuals who are board members, many of them bring along the support of their organizations. But, you know, when we chose them, we wanted to make sure that we invited people to be board members who were mission aligned, who worked for organizations who were mission aligned. And so we think that is a great strength for us, and that is going to, you know, help us be very resilient in this time and, you know, kind of, you know, address all issues as they come or, Just be prepared. But again, not overreactive, and just be solid in our response and resolute in our response. And some things we're not going to change, right?
Right.
We're going to continue to serve the underserved. We're going to continue to represent the underrepresented, continue to resource the under-resourced, employ where we can the underemployed. So all of those things are going to still be mission critical for us. And we're looking to maintain our current partnerships and add new partners as well who feel that what we're doing resonates with them and is in line with their mission. And, you know, so there'll be some people who now have said, who may not have been partners before, that said, this is where I want to take a stand, and this is where I want to move. And then they might find that the Urban League is a great partner to do so with.
We're talking with Thomas Buford Jr., president and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. Let's get into them, maybe that concept of partnership then. Mm-hmm. The partners that you have now, and what you said, there might be others. I would think there are others who'd right. like to be partners. Why? This is probably something that you have to deal with on a fairly consistent basis. Why would an entity want to partner with the Buffalo Urban League?
Right. And, you know, let me just say the Buffalo Urban League has been around since 1927, right? So we're looking, you know, we're on the doorsteps or approaching our centennial. So we've been around a long time. We have a very trusted voice in the community. We're able to get in spaces. We've served people over and over. And, you know, that can be challenging for many institutions, right? Just the distrust.
Sure.
Institutions, you know, financial institutions, medical institutions, government
institutions. There's an overall institutional backlash,
right?
So there's that.
Right? So we're in those spaces, and we can help make those introductions and, you know, say that if they are a partner of ours, then I know that our community respects that. At that same time, everyone's not going to fit that, right? We're not looking to partner with everyone. You know, we have to feel that they are mission aligned, and then that they're looking to serve the community in the same thoughtful, compassionate, and sensitive ways, culturally sensitive ways that we're able to do that. And, you know, we serve a broad community.
Certainly.
Right? When we say we underserved, that's anyone looking for resources who may not, resources may be available, but not connecting, right? So we look at ourselves as a connector, as a convener in many spaces, and putting other organizations together that might not have worked together, giving them a common space to work and operate. And then, you know, from an employment and workforce, from youth education, from health equity. So we're moving in all of those spaces. We've been in this solidly in the housing, child welfare spaces. We've been there. Those have always been impactful, all the way up to the work that we do in entrepreneurship and small business also financial literacy. So anything from this along this hierarchy, right, from safety all the way up to self-actualization, we have programs, services, and resources that touch those. And I think that resonates with, most partners, right?
I'm wondering maybe the kind of conversations you've had, if maybe you can gauge them over maybe the last 3 years. I'm thinking specifically since mm-hmm. May 14th, the attack on the Jefferson Avenue Tops. Did you find perhaps more interested ears, interested hearts, for lack of a better term, in terms of partnerships? People were a little more interested in, like you said, aligning with your mission. Has that changed in any way? I'm wondering if you can kind of gauge or grade that.
Right. So what I will say is that certainly in light of, well, I'll start. My tenure at the Buffalo Urban League started during the pandemic.
Hmm.
Right. So we did see a lot of coalition work happening. We saw a lot of funders who, you know, in some cases who come with programming that they support that's very specific. And I don't want to say restricted, but they
sure.
wanted to go. And
they have their own.
They have their own.
Sense,
right.
Yeah. Mission,
and then
yeah.
And during the pandemic, they said, hey, you know, we want to relax that. And we have a trusted partnership. and we want you to use that where it's best needed, right? Or most needed. So we saw that. And then certainly in May 14th, it just exposed a lot of, while resources were there, they weren't always placed in the most needed places or prioritized in the spaces that might have needed them most. So we started to see more attention come to that, to examine not only the incident of trauma that happened on May 14th, 2022, but you know that tragedy, but all of the conditions that existed, you know, leading up to that, long-term conditions, long-term issues that plagued certain communities, certain populations and geographies that, you know, came or all of a sudden center stage.
Yeah, we had a spotlight on it.
Right. Yeah, right. So, and then, you know, there has been continuous actions. I would say that none of our partners have backed down. Hmm. Some of them have doubled, tripled down, if you will. Some of them have become very much more intentional. You know, we need that, right? That we need to be deliberate and intentional. And they're looking at ways to help the organizations that are doing this work be sustainable, investing not only in programs, but also in our infrastructure, right? To make sure that as an entity, we remain viable and can continue to do viable and healthy and can continue to do this work, this very, very critical work that we're doing.
Hey, that's got to be tremendously gratifying and, you know, emboldening that there are, like you said, partners who double down, triple down in right. some cases. I mean, that's got to say something about the folks that you have partnered with.
Right. And, you know, we want to always be able to show them that the investment that they're making in our organization, that it is producing outcomes that are in agreement with what they're trying to do in the community, that might impact, in many cases, impact some of their own employees, right? We're always conscious of that, that we're being good stewards of the investment that they're making in us. And, you know, we think that these partnerships, many of them long-lasting, some new, that we're evolving through, but you know, we value them all, and big and small. You know, everyone contributes in their own way, and time, talent, and treasure. So we, you know, it, sometimes it's funding, sometimes it's volunteerism, sometimes it's helping our staff, sometimes it's supporting programs, and again, sometimes just infrastructure, right? So we look at all of that as very important in our way forward. And to continue to strengthen us as an organization and making us more resilient.
Yeah, you mentioned infrastructure a couple of times, so I'm kind of curious exactly what that looks like, what we're talking about.
Right. So, you know, as a nonprofit organization, many times I always think of things like if we're gonna get support, I look for a couple of things, right? If I had to have my top three conditions, like I'd love it to be unrestricted, right? Mm-hmm. Let us find the best use for it. Trust us that we have the best use. The second thing is immediate, right? There's some things that sometimes funding's available, there's a couple of rounds you need to go to, and then finally it'll be available next year. So sometimes if it's available, you know, sooner, better. And then the third thing, again, is if it's multi-year. And that's when I start to talk about infrastructure, right?
Okay.
It's great if you get one-time funding. You can't do a lot of planning with that. But when you have something over a multiple year, over a longer horizon, then certainly you can do more planning. As challenges come, as things change, you can respond to them differently you know, without any really, really critical impact to the organization. We know that in these past few weeks, there are some organizations whose missions, whose programming is in certain spaces, their impact, whether it be temporary or, you know, long-term, even a temporary impact has made them really had to make some difficult choices in their staffing and the ability to deliver programming. So infrastructure dollars help you kind of weather those storms, whether it be for short-term or to give you just some breathing room or a little bridge so that you can, you know, get to, you know, ride out some of the changes or storms, if you will.
I see you smiling when you say that breathing room. You say it's breathing room. So does should I infer then that you do have an infrastructure in place that you feel makes the Buffalo Urban League resilient to the times?
I do believe so. I do believe so. I mean, despite, we have to be in that place all the time, right? We have to be in that place all the time. We, as part of our strategic planning, we're always looking at the resiliency of the organization. We're almost a 100-year organization, right? So we always have to look at what we're doing. Is it relevant? Not just is it relevant to us as an organization, but is it really relevant to the people that we're trying to serve, to the community that we're trying to serve? We're saying empowering communities and changing lives. We have to know if we're really, really living up to that. So we're always looking at ways to make sure that as an organization, we are in a place where we can be agile, where we can be responsive, especially now that we know the volume and the velocity of change is unprecedented, right? And we saw that in many spaces. We saw that in weather. We saw that in climate. Changes here. We saw that in the pandemic, health changes, right? We've seen this in the last couple of years show itself in many, many different ways. But we have to be able to be responsive to that and not have all of our eggs in one basket. But if we do it. So we try to make sure we have the right mix of programs and that they, many of them kind of serve each other that we can change if change is needed.
I want to get into that idea of relevance when we come back. We're talking with Thomas Buford Jr., President and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. You're listening to What's Next on WBFO.
We at Buffalo Toronto Public Media love to bring you your favorite national programs, but we know that it's our local programs and reporting that make WBFO truly unique. For example, our Disabilities Beat reporting elevates marginalized voices.
But I thought it was wrong that there seemed to be an invisible barrier between the ableist world and the people with disabilities. And I said, I'm going to find a way to fix that.
This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. I'm Jay Moran. With me, we have Thomas Buford Jr., President and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. You really intrigued me when you mentioned relevance, and you made that real clear. It's not relevant. It's not the relevance that we as an organization feel, but the relevance to our communities, our underrepresented communities. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how that you're constantly gauging that and how you're adjusting to it.
Right. Well, I would say last year we did our strategic plan. We did our strategic plan looking out the next couple of years. And some of that, required engagement with our a broad base of stakeholders, our community members, our funders, our other partners that we work with, our employees, right, who are members of the community, our board members. Well, we just try to get a different perspective to see if what we're aiming to do is really, really making a difference. Another group that we use is we have certain auxiliaries at the Urban League, common to Urban League affiliates. One of them is our young professionals,
right?
So this is an age cohort from anywhere from about 21 years old to 40 years old, right? Who are, make sure that we are, not that ageism is not creeping in, right? And we're starting to think of, as I move into the thought process of my parents, like those commercials on TV, like, yes. We don't want you to be your parents, right? So as you move into that we are, we're constant about this youth voice, that we are not just, we're building a, a future for tomorrow, that we're making sure that the most vulnerable citizens and community members are placed in getting opportunity to live their best lives, right? Even our elderly community, we run a senior a center as well, right? And we want those members of our community to also be as independent as possible and, you know, have the best quality of life, right? And introducing in the technology, the same thing we're doing for youth, we want that to resonate across and be impactful for, you know, a full breadth of our community members. But that's it, really touching base, our programming, making sure it moves into different spaces. And then really, you know, I always say that the Urban League, we don't speak for the community, but we do speak up for the community, right? Mm, so we okay. amplify those voices, but we're not the voice. We're not what we say is determines what the community says, but we listen. And then when we get into spaces that some of the community members might not be in rooms that they might not be in, right? Because we have access to streets and suites. And when we get into any of those places, you know, our mission, our communication is the same. We communicate strongly and unapologetically in all of those spaces. So I think that is part of what keeps us relevant. And then, you know, belonging to a national organization and having a perspective or a national perspective, and then understanding how other communities are responding is also, you know, very helpful. Right, that we're not here in a bubble, and the solutions that we're trying to come up with, the challenges that we have may not be geographically unique, and the solutions that we come up with, that we look broadly to bring in and import if we need to, those solutions.
So when it comes to voices, I'm really curious about your young professionals.
Yes.
Because I would have to think that, you know, you're attracting, you know, people who are interested in the movement,
right.
The Buffalo, the Urban League movement, who are interested in also perhaps also, you know, networking on a business level as well. But I would think also in there are some really strong opinions about not just what the Urban League does, but what this community is all about. What are you hearing? I'm guessing that because I don't know your age, Thomas. I'm guessing, you know, you look young still, but I'm guessing you're not inside.
That's very gracious.
Yes, you're not inside. Well, yeah. You see, I don't have the same problem. People know my age just by seeing me. But to this, you know, it's probably a different perspective than what you have.
Right, and we're noticing that. I mean, we're dealing with different generations.
Right.
We're seeing that, you know, through employment, we're looking at, you know, just how they view opportunities. Right, they want to remove barriers, and what we consider what would maybe my generation entering the workforce or, you know, moving through and graduating, if you will, through the workforce is different from what some of the people want now. Right, like, you know, I notice in interviews. That, you know, people who are entering the workforce now who are very skilled, they want some flexibility that, you know, I would have been terrified to ask for. You know, I would have been terrified to ask anyone about how many days do I have to be in the office. Like, it's just, you know, so, but those are things that are really important. Their own kind of work-life balance, if you will. Some of them, you know, how they prioritize some of those things. And then, you know, this is important because we're able to have that communication with this group. We're able to understand. We help synthesize that and socialize that with other employers, right? So we're in this space kind of championing that for them. But, you know, we're learning. And these are just bright, right?
Sure.
And you just got to make sure your ideas are not stale. And, you know, they are so helpful. They're so key. In those spaces, right? They're having discussions. You know, I would say in many cases their tolerance level is probably not the same, right? As we've seen in generations, that, you know, they look at their own ways of responding. And, you know, we learn a lot from them. I think, you know, so we don't go into it that is it's one-way communication that, you know, we're, you know, they're listening to us and we're bringing all the wisdom. There in those youth voices, if you know, and they're not babes, but you know, sometimes out of the mouth of babes, right? Those, that fresh perspective is so very important.
I'd like to maybe hear a little bit about that, because here you are. I mean, you not only have been running the Buffalo Urban League now for five some years, mm-hmm. but before that, if you're a banker, you did international banking, so you've got a broad perspective of your own when it comes to the world and to this country and to finance, which is, you know, the lifeblood, right. You might say, of the country. So how about that? Lessons that maybe a young person has taught you or maybe helped you to shape a new view on things?
Right. And one is that they want to, you know, like even a young country, right? They don't want taxation without representation, right? They want their voices to be heard. They want to be in control over the things that are going to be impacting their lives currently and going forward. So, you know, they don't want to just be brought in as kind of props, right? So I will tell you one of the ways, we always have a youth member on our board. The president of our young professionals is a voting board member for the Buffalo Urban League, and that has happened historically. And we engage them in the programming. We do a lot of co-facilitation of programming, you know, and just introducing them, helping them navigate through their careers. But understanding how they want to engage in those spaces is very, very important. So it's not just what we do, because we teach them about what we do. They teach us about how they want to be engaged, right? Mm. And we were able to share that and be able to communicate that to some of our other partners. Hey, this has been our experience because we interact with them in these spaces. I can't say that I can stay out at these parties that, you know, some of these other social events that they have. But we do learn a lot with them. These are bright individuals with sometimes fresh perspective. Just different solutions to, you know, some issues that might have been longstanding. They once you hear them, they sound so simple.
Mm.
And you would think that why wouldn't I have thought about that? At the same time, when I speak about tolerance, there are some things that they are not going to, you know, they're a hard no for them.
Right.
This is a space that, you know, I found, and I appreciate that courage. They said, you know, this is what I want, and they're sometimes very, very clear about what they want, and they're also very, very clear about what they don't want and the importance. I would say that they have a great perspective on inclusiveness.
Okay.
They have a great perspective on the value of diversity and how that and you know, how that impacts everyone with a lot better outcomes.
Sure.
So they just don't bring some of the even stigmas that, you know, or the unconscious bias that that has happened over the generations. So we've seen that evolve, and just sharing, you know, just listening to them share, just watching them interact, and then having your own engagement with them. Again, we serve anyone in our programming from our foster care and adoption agencies from almost birth to seniors. So all of this intergenerational interaction is dynamic, and it just kind of watching that sharing happening in our own kind of ecosystem gives us a really, really powerful source of information and perspective. So I think all of this is relevant.
And, you know, as you were talking about, you know, the hard no's in some cases, the commitment to inclusivity, I see this kind of gleam in your eye developing.
Yeah.
Do you have a confidence that this generation, that you're seeing these young professionals right here in Buffalo, part of the Buffalo Urban League, they are going to take
I am.
This movement to the next level?
It's incredibly inspiring. You know, we work with youth in our national programming. The Urban League has national conferences. We don't only show up with the, you know, adult members, employees, board members, but the youth, they attend, and, you know, they get to share with youth across the country. When you watch the ideas that they come up with, when you watch, you know, just the confidence, and not just disrespectful and just being bold and outspoken, but speaking with well-researched, well-founded ideas and being able to articulate that, just watching that, that's just a lot of promise, you know, and all, you know, you want to do whatever you can do to, you know, help them be successful, to help them kind of, you know, so you can live vicariously sometimes
right.
through them, right? Just, in, you know, and harness that energy and making sure that if there's any blocking and tackling that you can possibly do to help them be successful, that that happens. At the same time, you know, using, you know, your experiences to give them some guidance to help them navigate through some spaces as they move forward. But very, very encouraging. Very encouraging.
And I just wondered, though, at the same time, going back to our beginning sure. of our conversation, this kind of national level of the everything's happening fast and furious, and there's almost this, I'll use the mm-hmm. term backlash. You didn't use it, but there's this sense that, you know, some things that have shown some progress, DEI and such in recent years, is now, you know, maybe, you know, either it's almost being utilized in a different way, weaponized in a different way. And I guess what I'm wondering is, does that, I guess it's obviously got to disappoint you to know that there are these talented young people who are ready to make change, who can make change, can make things happen. And yet there might be a national attitude that's, I wouldn't call it a majority, but enough of a force that is overlooking this potential.
Right. So I think, you know, the focus is still on this potential. I think that, you know, we talked about the coalition building. When we will know that people are understanding how some things affect really, really broad populations that might not, you know, might not be first of mind to everyone. They might not see the interconnectivity of some of these populations or geographies or, you know, how it crosses generations. So, you know, that that is one of those places, again, where we look at it's just impacting so many people differently in different spaces. And, you know, we don't want to be overreactive. But I still think the future is bright. I think these younger groups and even the more seasoned or mature groups are still very outspoken. And they're understanding all the tools, maybe understanding more than they ever did about how our system of democracy works. You know, at the Urban League, at the national level, we have a strategy, our 3D strategy, which is certainly to demand democracy and also to defend diversity and defeat poverty. So those things are always going to be at the top of our list, and we're finding more and more innovative ways as different challenges come. You know, but it's also, I think we still believe that this country's, while imperfect, it's, you know, our Constitution and our democratic system, while imperfect, is still, you know, still the best. And, you know, there's always hope there. And, you know, in some cases, we're going to test the boundaries of that, right?
Right.
And some of these challenges, this is, you know, we're not looking at partisan. When we respond to some of these changes and if we see things starting to be repealed or be challenged, it wouldn't matter, you know, kind of what party was leading it. You know, if it's not serving not serving our community in a way that it should, if it's taking away rights that we believe belong to, you know, to a broad group of, you know, of people in our country, then, you know, we're going to continue to speak out, you know, against that, right? So while it's very challenging, you know, we're here to keep stay on mission, right? You know, there are people that are saying, well, they could be targeting, they could be those things. We, you know, we understand that. We understand some of the nuancing in languages, but, you know, we're going to stay on mission. I can say that, right? You know, we had, there was a fast food restaurant that, you know, had a full name, right? And one of the terms in that didn't seem to be healthy. They had fried. I'll just say they had fried in their name, right? And they changed to an acronym, right? And when that happened, the menu was the same the next day, right?
Right.
So their mission was the same. Their menu, their delivery, their tools, their everything else was the same. And they delivered in that same way. So, yeah, you know, we're not going to be stuck on terminology. We're not going to be stuck on nomenclature. But we will be stuck on, you know, the deliverables, the values, and, you know, what we think is the right thing to do for our community. So that those things will be unchanged unapologetically.
Thomas Buford Jr. is our guest this morning on What's Next, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. We have a few more minutes with him. We'll come back with those minutes here on What's Next on WBFO.
At Buffalo Toronto Public Media, we're committed to serving our entire community. Whether you're listening to investigative journalism on WBFO, enjoying world-class performances on WNED Classical, discovering new local artists on WBFO The Bridge, or immersing yourself in mysteries on WNED PBS. Public media has something for everyone. Explore programs that matter to you at WNED.org. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And welcome back to What's Next. Our guest is Thomas Buford Jr., the president and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League, coming up here for our final 6-7 minutes of conversation. And I've appreciated all the frank conversation we've had here so far. Mr. Buford, thank you very much for that. We didn't really have a lot of chance to talk about the underrepresented communities that you look to represent as the Buffalo Urban League. What do you see? What are we seeing in this community now? What are the issues that you see? Some I'm going to assume to a certain extent are longstanding. Others maybe not so much. I'll let you kind of take us through that.
Right. So I mean, there's change. There's change on the horizon for some of these communities. Right. A lot of the long term discrimination that existed on the east side. The products of that in terms of the social determinants of health and wealth, you know, there are resources that are coming to address this. And, you know, some of the things that we want to make sure that we're in a position to help safeguard is that there will be development, right? We know that the east side of Buffalo is some of the most vacant space there, you know, but it is also very close to downtown. Mm-hmm. It is very close to the theater district. It is very close to the waterfront. So, you know, and then it has the property values have not grown at the same pace across different sides of Main Street. So, you know, some change is going to come there and some investment is going to come there. So we will see development. But like as in many other places, we don't want development with displacement.
Right.
So we want development without displacement. As the community evolves, we want to make sure that those people who have been longstanding residents, you know, have an equity stake, not only in the community once it's fully evolved and that they have, you know, still have ownership and equity, but as this as it builds out, that they are fully participating in those processes and have equity in that as well, in terms of their businesses thriving, in terms of job creation and wealth creation, and not only wealth creation but wealth retention. You know, there are still many homeowners there, although again their properties did not appreciate at the same levels. If they still own it, showing having programs and tools and resources for them to retain that, so that when the development comes and the neighborhood kind of moves to a space that they always that it should have been and is more desirable, then they will still be able to be there, right? So that's a challenge. But there is some investment coming to the east side. I was a Buffalo. I want to talk about underserved neighborhoods. So I'll just start with that one. And
sure.
That's not all inclusive, but you know, the Buffalo Urban League will be building our own campus on the east side of Buffalo, specifically on Jefferson Avenue. And we looked, you know, we've started in that planning with the land acquisitions, and then of course, because of the different types of businesses and things that existed on Jefferson Avenue with the industry that was put there, there was going to be some environmental remediation. So we're going to go through all of those processes and, you know, preparing the land for construction. But we're looking, we're still in fundraising and our planning, early planning stages. But, you know, we want all of that to start to coincide with you know, our centennial. So you should hopefully hear some groundbreaking, some ceremonial groundbreaking news coming soon. And so we're excited about that for our relocation of our headquarters, plus some retail. And, you know, depending on how much we can expand out with on that block, possibly some housing that happens there, right? But it'll speak to all of our many facets of our programming. Another thing that we're doing in terms of moving directly to the community, right now we're located in a few spaces across the city of Buffalo. We will, you know, you're going to see some mobile units come out, branded mobile units, really in the health space, right? Mm-hmm. We're working with some partners that we'll be getting to do screening around mammograms, prostate screening, and then, you know, another mobile unit that we're going to really look at enrolling people in possibly WIC and other programming, as well as maternal health, right? So these will be large mobile units that we'll be able to deploy, and where transportation, you know, housing and other things are barriers, we'll be able to get to those individuals and to get into spaces that were needed. So those are all things that we're excited about. They're natural extensions, but we're prioritizing them and looking for partners who we have some great strategic partners already. But you know, anyone who's interested in moving in that space along with us, we welcome them. You know,
2 years from the centennial, feel pretty confident this is going to fall into place.
Yeah, we are. You know, there are some challenges. There are some things that we, you know, that we have funding across at many levels. Some of it federal, right? So we also are looking at how certain of those things play out. But you know, sometimes when one door either closes temporarily or, you know, maybe permanently, in some cases. We have a great network. We have a very valued mission, and we think that people are going to show up. You know, this is not, you know, the Urban League is not doing something for the Urban League. You know, the work we do is for the community, and anyone who, you know, who believes in the betterment of that, we understand. We're working diligently, but we're finding partners, and they're showing up. And those who have been here are staying, and then we have some new ones, but we're fairly confident. You know, it won't be because we stopped at any point. It won't be because of any lack of effort, or you know, any wavering from our mission. You know, our board is extremely supportive. We have great leadership there and the governance to, you know, to help support this mission. And, you know, they bring the resources they have as well to bear. So that said, I'm very, very optimistic about the way forward.
Well, I appreciate the optimistic hour of conversation that you've given us today. This has been a great conversation. Appreciate your frank conversation about some of the issues they're facing, but also about the vision moving forward. I really appreciate your time today,
well,
sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us in this space and, again, allowing us to amplify, you know, not only the voice of the Urban League, but the voices of the communities that we serve.
Absolutely. Thomas Buford Jr., thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thomas Buford Jr. is the president and CEO of the Buffalo Urban League. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.